Bitcoin has been selling off big time, but the groundwork is being laid for the trading of digital securities, Bitcoin-type assets that could resemble stocks or bonds.
You should get to a point where you will really open up capital markets. They will be much more transparent. They will be much faster. They will be much cheaper.
Plus, a briefing on the Mueller report. And Pinterest and Zoom make their public debut. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Charlie Turner in New York. Before we get to our main story on Bitcoin, here are some headlines. Attorney General William Barr is answering questions about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's highly anticipated report during a news conference beginning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Thursday. The Justice Department said Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who appointed Mr. Mueller nearly 2 years ago and oversaw his work, will be on hand. The news conference comes as Washington awaits the nearly 400-page report, a redacted version of which Mr. Barr has said he would make public Thursday. A pair of tech unicorns will go public Thursday, hoping the messy recent debut of Lyft is in the rearview mirror. Sources say online image board Pinterest has priced its IPO at $19 a share, $2 above the high end of the expected range. Zoom Video Communications, a cloud video conferencing service, priced its stock Wednesday at $36 a piece, valuing the company at more than $10 billion on a fully diluted basis. Federal prosecutors have charged 60 doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and other medical professionals with illegally prescribing more than 32 million powerful and addictive pain pills. The indictments announced Wednesday are part of the Justice Department's broader effort to fight the nation's opioid abuse crisis. The charges involve more than 350,000 illegal prescriptions written in 5 states. Prosecutors say medical professionals knowingly provided addictive drugs to vulnerable patients, accepted costly cash payments, signed blank prescription forms to be completed by their staffs, and billed Medicare and Medicaid for unnecessary tests and procedures. Bitcoin's glory days may be long gone, with its value way below the all-time high of about $20,000. But the Wall Street Journal says cryptocurrency backers believe that Bitcoin may live on through blockchain, Bitcoin's underlying technology. Let's explore this with Paul Vigna, who covers cryptocurrencies for the Wall Street Journal. Paul, am I right in saying that these blockchain networks will lead to the creation of what are known as digital securities? These are assets that look like Bitcoin but could represent things like stocks.
Yeah, I mean, very broadly speaking, that's exactly what we're talking about. People have been trying to do this for several years now, taking the technology and the concepts that underlie Bitcoin, the software, and adapting it for different uses. I mean, essentially, Bitcoin is a digital token itself. So the idea is just that you can create a digital token that can represent anything. It can represent a share in a company. It can represent a bond that is sold by a company. People are talking about these kinds of digital securities for a whole range of different assets. But right now, what's sort of interesting to me is the idea that you have a lot of people sort of racing to build platforms to issue these digital securities.
So companies, startups, banks, whomever, they could create their own digital securities?
Yes, absolutely. And it's starting to happen. And it's been happening. What you had was, if any of the listeners out there recall, the whole ICO mania, the initial coin offering mania, which really took off in 2017 and went into 2018, where you had startups creating digital tokens that they were selling online. The legal status of those assets was very much up in the air.
There was evidence of a lot of trading fraud, wasn't there?
Well, yeah, there was. I mean, it was a mania, it was a gold rush. And what ended up happening was, because there was so much easy money to be made, you had a lot of people going in and just offering up completely fraudulent assets for sale.
Now to the present, you say that states, regulators, lawmakers, they're all laying the legal groundwork for the creation of these digital securities?
Yes. So what happened was, when the ICO mania took off, you're absolutely right, Charles, in that there was a lot of fraud. There was a lot of malinvestment there. But you also could see that there was something very interesting there. Companies, for really the first time, were able to raise capital online. That's a really powerful idea. The problem is, how do you do it in a way that you boil out all that fraud that you were talking about? You are starting to see regulators, mainly in the U.S. is what I focused on, but it's also happening overseas, starting to put in the guardrails around these this idea of what a digital token can be, what it's legally supposed to look like if it's going to be X or Y. Because you have the regulatory framework starting to come into focus, you have companies that are trying to build platforms to do it in a legally compliant way. That's going to take a long time. This is not going to be something that happens in 5 or 6 months, more like 5 or 6 years.
But ultimately, it's going to lead to a simpler sort of platform. It's going to be a lot simpler than, you know, trading regular stocks or bonds.
Yes, ostensibly it should be. The idea is that you're lowering the costs tremendously for companies to go through the whole process of raising capital. You are opening up markets to them. You can target any investor anywhere with a digital token that you can sell. Now, there is a flip side to that, because in the capital markets, you've always had this sort of debate about who should be allowed to invest in startup companies. They are obviously extremely risky. Currently, it's always been something that in the very beginning, it could be friends or family, but it kind of quickly becomes an issue where you have to be an accredited investor investing in a private company. And that means basically VCs. And they've had a sort of stranglehold on the whole startup world, to the point where when a company like Facebook, they will do well, they'll do fine, they'll tap the public markets and they'll raise a lot of money and people will buy the stock and the stock will probably go up. But the real huge gains came from when that company was at point zero.
Yeah.
All of them. So there's always been this argument in the capital markets about who can get in on private companies before they go public, because that's when the real money is about to be made. What this technology should do is to kind of flatline that entire argument, so that anybody could invest in a private company at the outset. Now, like I said, there is a flip side to that. And the flip side to that is it is extremely risky. And investors have not had that option before. And I personally think what you will end up seeing is you will have this sort of land rush of people really enthused in this idea. Oh, my God, I can get in on the next Facebook. You will see a lot of people get burned. It's going to be probably to some extent a relatively painful trial and error. You know, it's one thing to say what a digital asset is legally.
Yeah.
It's another to say what is a good thing for people to expose them to in terms of an investment, and what can you get in return for it. It's going to be an entirely separate and new process of education for people who are investing money. But you should get to a point where you will really open up capital markets. They will be much more transparent. They will be much faster. They will be much cheaper for everyone involved. The whole point of capital markets is to take excess capital, right, and move it to where it can do the best good. If you can improve that process even more, well, then maybe you can have an even better economy. And that's the ultimate goal of all of this. You can start to see what this is going to look like. And that's really what I was trying to write about.
Paul Vigna's article is Crypto Faithful Say Blockchain Can Remake Market Machinery. You can find it at WSJ.com. Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Vigna, thanks a lot, Paul.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Now on to some more headlines from the Wall Street Journal. Former GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain says he doesn't intend to withdraw his name from consideration for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board. Cain told the Wall Street Journal he's very committed to the vetting process as the White House considers whether to formally nominate him. Cain added that the Fed needs new voices and agreed with the president that the Fed has been too quick to raise interest rates in the past. President Trump earlier this month announced his intent to nominate Cain, but last week four Republican senators said they wouldn't support him, throwing the likelihood of his possible confirmation into question. Pork prices are climbing in China as the pig population declines. China is home to about half of the world's pigs, but the domestic population has been devastated by a deadly virus known as African swine fever. The Chinese government says pork prices could rise by more than 70% this year, and the pig population is down nearly 40 million from a year earlier. Amid the outbreak, China has been turning to the U.S. and other nations for pork. More retailers are accepting their competitors' returns in a bid to win over more shoppers. Walgreens Boots Alliance and Nordstrom are among them. They're letting those who shop at other brands and retailers pick up and return at some of their stores. Walgreens is partnering with Levi Strauss and Urban Outfitters, and Nordstrom is linking up with retailers including Cole Haan. Brick-and-mortar stores are trying new methods to keep customers coming into stores amid more online shopping and competition from powerhouses like Amazon. And that's what's news for this morning. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal.